This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up on this weekend edition, is global instability the product of America's growing inability to lead? My good friend, former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum, was with me here in Israel, and he joined me to answer that question. And is a permanent peace agreement even possible between Israel and Hamas? I asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman, Mark Regev, that question earlier this week. I'll have that interview for you coming up. CBN's bureau chief here in Jerusalem, Chris Mitchell, just returned to Jerusalem from Iraq earlier this week. And I asked him the question, what does it look like on the ground in Iraq? And we talked about whether or not there's another crisis unfolding in this troubled region. Chris talks about that coming up on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Also, Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of National Religious Broadcasters, and Rich Bott, president of Bott Radio Network, joined me to talk about our experiences in Israel this week. All that's coming up right here on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, where you can find out more about today's guest and the topics we're covering. You can also find out about September the 14th, Star Spangled Sunday, and how your church can participate in this event. Well, on Monday, when we landed in Israel, an extension of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas had been agreed to. We know that ceasefire didn't hold, but on Monday night, Senator Rick Santorum joined me to talk about events in Israel and the growing instability in the Middle East.
Rick, welcome to Jerusalem.
Well, thank you. You beat me here by a few hours, so you can do the official welcome. It's been a great day here. As we mentioned, it's been a wonderful day as a tourist to be here in Israel, but in many respects, a very sad day.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody else here. It seems like we were traveling around the old city almost by ourselves,
right.
And going to places where you normally wait 2 or 3 hours to get through a place, and you walk in and there's nobody there. So you asked the question about the policies of this administration. I don't think it's policies of administration to refuse to lead. I think he is just deciding not to lead. I think his policy is to retrench and to allow others in the world to take leadership roles. Tony, could you imagine being here at a time where there's an active war going on here in the Middle East between Israel and Hamas, and the United States is not involved in the peace negotiations? I mean,
right.
Think about that. Can you remember any period of time when the United States wasn't one of the leading players? And I think, and this is not the Israeli government, this is Rick Santorum saying this, I suspect that the Israelis felt that the Egyptians were a more honest broker than the Americans were.
Right. Right.
And that's why they went to the Egyptians. Now, think about that.
Well, the Egyptians seem to have more at stake.
Well, Egyptians recognize radical Islam for
right.
what it is.
Absolutely.
They recognize the danger of Hamas. They recognize the Muslim Brotherhood and ISIL and all these other groups. And this president does not. And so at least in that respect, the Israelis feel that they have somebody at the negotiating table who understands what's at stake with the Egyptians.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point, Senator, about the United States' role in global affairs. Now, I think this president's policies have led to this instability that we're seeing, this implosion that's taking place around the world. But let's go forward for just a moment. There are some who are saying America should not be involved. America really has been the mortar that has kept the world together in many ways. So an isolationist view that some, even in your own party, the Republican
yes.
Party, hold to, would be just as dangerous.
No question about it. And look, I understand how Americans can be are weary. I'm weary of our military being deployed, and I'm certainly grieved by the amount of people who have been killed and injured, and the families have been affected. This has not been an easy time. No question about it. It's not been an easy time for Americans. But the role of the president is to make the case as to what is in the national security interest of our country to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And from my perspective, the president simply has not done that. He's not gone out and made the case why we need to engage, not necessarily militarily, but we need to engage in making sure that our interests are being protected. And he hasn't done it.
Yeah, I mean, you see that not only here in Israel, you see it in Iraq, you saw it in Syria, where Christians have been slaughtered. other religious
horrific
minorities.
And the rise of Iran now and its influence in the Iraqi government and in the region. Again, this is just horrible consequences all the way around, all because the president didn't exercise leadership and do what would have been easy, relatively easy to do, and at a minimal threat of loss of life for Americans.
Now, there are, I want to be very clear, and I know you and I have talked about this, so you share my thoughts on this. Our concern is not just for the Jewish people in Israel. It is for all of the people here in this region of the world that want peace. And there are Palestinians that are living, unfortunately, under, really, as hostages under Hamas, who want peace too.
Yes.
And we can help them if we will be strong in supporting our ally Israel to come to terms to where they can live in peace here in this country.
I can say that there's no one who's been a stronger supporter of the state of Israel. But the reason I'm a strong supporter of the state of Israel, because I think it's in the national security interest of our country to be a supporter of the state of Israel. I think Israel is on the front line in the danger zone, surrounded historically by radical Islamists, and they are the front guard, they're the front door to this scourge that is racing across the Middle East. And if we don't stand with them, then as the Ayatollah has said many times, calling Israel the little Satan and America the great Satan. We are linked at the hip against radical Islam. The problem is we have a president who doesn't see that problem.
Well, ISIS, they even said they will raise a flag to Allah over the White House.
Yes.
And we have people who laugh at that. I don't laugh at that. I take that as a serious threat. And Israel, by doing business here in trying to eliminate the military capacity of these terrorists, actually are doing America a big favor.
We have to remember the huge economic impact of 9/11 on this country, on our country. We have to look at the economic impact that terrorism has on Israel. Terrorism is not the same. It's not the same kind of raising the American, is raising the Islamic flag over the White House. Am I worried that they're going to actually conquer the White House? No, but I am concerned that they can have a huge impact on destroying the economy of this country, creating all sorts of difficulties for Americans, and in fact, yes, raising their flag here in Jerusalem for sure.
Yeah. Senator Rick Santorum, I know you've got to run off to another interview, so thanks so much for being with us, and I know we're going to be connecting over the next couple of days.
We'll be spending a little time together. Maybe we can get back on the radio and talk some more about this.
That was Senator Rick Santorum, who joined me on Monday night in the studios there in Jerusalem. All right, when we come back from the break, the Prime Minister's spokesman met with us, and I talked to him about whether or not a permanent peace agreement could be reached between Hamas and Israel. That interview with Mark Rigev is coming up right after the break. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins. I hope you'll plan now to join me on September the 26th through the 28th for this year's Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C., as we stand alongside thousands of like-minded Americans who want to see our country return to the founding principles of faith, family, and freedom. Confirmed speakers include Governor Bobby Jindal, Senator Ted Cruz, Michelle Malkin, Mark Levin, Rick Santorum, Star Parker, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Michelle Bachman, and many more. Today's hottest topics will be addressed: religious liberty, protection of life and marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. Register today for just $99 at valuesvotersummit.org. That's valuesvotersummit.org. This September, let's stand together, defending the dream, defining the future. Values Voter Summit is sponsored by FRC Action, AFA Action, American Values, Liberty Council, Liberty Council Action, Liberty Institute, and Family Research Council. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, I've seen a lot of action this week during my time in Israel. Being here during this war between Israel and Hamas has not only furthered my desire to support Israel, it's given me an understanding of what the people here are facing each and every day. And although Israel's Iron Dome has been very successful shooting down Hamas rockets, you know, I begin to wonder if peace would even be possible between the two, considering Hamas's fervor to see the Jews eradicated. Earlier this week, I asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman, Mark Rigev, that exact question, and here is what he had to say. Mark, let me first ask you another 24-hour extension on the truce. Are we close to seeing a more permanent peace between Hamas and Israel?
I don't know. I'd like to see peace with the Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza too. But Hamas is a very militant, very extreme organization. And any peace and quiet that we might have is going to be based on deterrence, on their understanding that it's simply not in their interest to shoot rockets into Israel.
And for Israel, there's a sense the prime minister said that he's going in to ensure that Hamas does not have the ability to continue to harass and terrorize Israel. Is that still the goal here?
Yep. The goal is ultimately defensive, to protect our people, just as the people of the United States would rightly demand of their government to protect it if terrorists were shooting rockets across the frontier targeting your cities. So the people of Israel expect us as a government to protect them, and that's what this operation is all about, to stop those rockets and to stop those terror tunnels coming into Israel. Now, that goal that Prime Minister Netanyahu, my boss, has articulated, that goal will be met. It'll be met by military means or by diplomatic means or by a combination of the two. But one way or another, the people of Israel will be protected from those rockets. Those rockets will not be coming in on our cities.
Mark, one final question. I want to shift gears just a bit. When Americans are looking at what's happening here in Israel with Hamas, you're a little closer here to what's happening in Syria and Iraq. Are some failing to connect the dots?
I think it's crucial to connect the dots. Ultimately, Hamas is not a unique phenomena. Hamas is part of a family of very extreme Islamist groups, whether it's ISIS in Iraq or Hezbollah in Lebanon or even Boko Haram in Nigeria. These groups, together with Hamas, they share this crazy extreme ideology. And they, of course, feed off each other. And they're a threat and an enemy of everyone who's not like them. And they're definitely a threat and an enemy to democratic societies like ours, like Israel, like the United States.
Well, Mark, I want you to know there are a lot of Americans, especially in the evangelical community, that support Israel's right to defend herself. And they're praying for the peace of Jerusalem, not just for the Jewish people, but for the Palestinian people in this region. I think most would agree this entire region is better when Israel and America are both strong, standing together against terrorism.
Well, I agree 100%. You know, the people of Gaza deserve better than this crazy leadership that has taken power violently there in Gaza. And ultimately, I believe we will prevail. I believe common sense and democracy and tolerance wins out in the end. But we have to have no illusions about the nature and character of our enemy. And let's be clear, if Hamas could, they probably would kill every single Israeli and then attack the United States. We can't allow them to do that. And it's crucial that we prevail in this current conflict.
Mark, thank you.
My pleasure.
Again, that was the spokesman for the Prime Minister, Mark Regev. And to find out more about our trip to Israel, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, the Middle East continues to be a hotbed, not only in Israel, but over in Iraq, where Christians remain on the run. Chris Mitchell, CBN's bureau chief in Jerusalem, was in Iraq last week. He joined me in Jerusalem upon his return. That interview is coming up right after this. Don't go away.
Some say that Americans are puritanical about sexuality, but the truth is that we live in a sex-saturated culture. Many of us find ourselves wondering, like the psalmist, how to keep ourselves pure. Mapping America 123 shows that about 97% of those in intact marriages who worship weekly have had only one sexual partner in the previous year, compared to only 62% among those in non-intact marriages or who are single and who never worship. For more on marriage, worship, and sexual purity, visit www.mappingamericaproject.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Evil unleashed. That's the only way I can describe what has taken place in Syria and now in Iraq. Fighters for the Islamic State have slaughtered Christians and other religious minorities, and now add to their list of atrocities the beheading of a journalist. American journalist James Foley was beheaded by the ISIS terrorist group in retaliation of the U.S. airstrikes that have gone on in the region. The group also has threatened to do the same to another captured journalist if the U.S. strikes again. CBN Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell just returned from Iraq, and he joined me in studio in Jerusalem.
Now, you just got back safely from Iraq. Chris, tell our listeners, what is the atmosphere like there?
Well, I see the atmosphere varies a little bit. In Erbil, which is the capital of Kurdistan, it is tense because, for example, just about 2 weeks ago, people in Erbil, some actually did flee to the mountains. Some expected ISIS to actually attack the capital of Kurdistan. If you go to places like Duhok, where we were just several days ago, this is where the Yazidi religious sect are fleeing. Tens of thousands of them sought refuge on this Mount Sinjar. And finally, the Peshmerga, which is the Kurdish military, were able to get an escape route for them. And we were at a UN camp where literally tens of thousands of people were coming. And I would say what's happened to a lot of the people, whether they're Christians or Yazidis or any of the minorities there, is they're just fleeing this rampage by ISIS. And if you can consider, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, these people were living in their own homes, their own villages or cities, and now they're living in a refugee camp, or as we saw in Erbil, many Christians are living in churches, they're living in schools, and their lives have just been changed dramatically and may never be the same again.
Amazing. I mean, in this is the first tragedy. The second tragedy is yet to unfold, but it is a humanitarian crisis that we're seeing, like in Erbil. A normal population of about 1.5 million, I think, mm-hmm. and you've got about that many refugees that have now come into the city, mm-hmm. yeah. and they just don't have the infrastructure to support them.
No, they don't. We talked to the governor of the Erbil just a few days ago, and that's exactly what he was saying as well. They're just not prepared for this kind of absorption that they can. And it's interesting. I expected to see thousands of people on the street. You don't see necessarily thousands of people on the street, but you see that, as I said, there's people in schools, there's people in homes, churches. Many of the churches have opened their doors. And we talked to two churches. One's called the Kurdisman Church, another AOG Church. And these people are just living throughout the facilities, they're, whether it's in the sanctuary or different classrooms or some of the places they use for kitchen facilities, and this is what's happening. And they just don't have the infrastructure to handle that. These people in the school's going to start in about 20 days. So what happens to these people? They really don't know right now.
Chris, describe the relief effort. I mean, are Americans on the ground there? Is U.S. government doing anything? What's happening in terms of providing relief to these refugees?
Well, the biggest, I think, would be the U.N., obviously, and they're providing these huge camps for these people. I mean, tens of thousands of people in some of these camps.
Amazing. Yeah. What kind of presence did the U.S. have on the ground there?
I didn't see much U.S. presence, personally. We were looking for some of the military presence, but that's kind of hidden right now. I don't think they were trying to be very visible. We didn't see a whole lot of U.S. aid on the ground. I just, like, it was the U.N. presence.
What about NGOs, ministries?
A lot of NGOs involved. We saw a number of NGOs. Samaritan's Purse was one. I know Operation Blessing CBN is going to be helping out as well. Some of the churches are opening their doors, but we saw a lot of people that were starting to get either on the ground already or getting ready to help out.
Again, that was Chris Mitchell, Bureau Chief for CBN in Jerusalem. To find out more about the work that Chris is doing and track him, go to the website tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. Don't go away. When we come back, Dr. Jerry Johnson and Rich Bott, president of Bott Radio Network, join me as we talk about our experiences this week in Israel. Don't go away. We're coming back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
FRC has several exciting internship options for college students and graduates. Apply for positions in media, policy research, government affairs, and many others. FRC interns experience weekly simulations of policy debate to practice defending Christian policy principles in an increasingly hostile environment. Interns are teamed with an FRC expert working diligently to further the cause of faith, family, and freedom. Interested? Go to www.frc.org/internships to learn more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as I've mentioned, I was broadcasting live from Jerusalem this week as I was there as a part of a small delegation from the National Religious Broadcasters, a group of evangelical broadcasters and leaders who were there to show our support for Israel's right to defend herself as a nation. Now, we were invited by the Israeli government to come and see firsthand what was happening on the ground, and we did. Get a first-hand view. Two of the leading men in the Christian broadcasting world joined me this week, National Religious Broadcasters President Jerry Johnson and President of Bot Radio Network, Rich Bot, joined me in studio there in Jerusalem. Thanks to both of you for tarrying with me late into the night.
Well, thank you, Tony. Glad to be here with you.
It's good to be here.
It is. It is. It has been a long day.
Yes.
It's been a long week so far. But anyway, it's been good. And we've seen a lot today. But before we get into the details of today, Dr. Johnson, I wanted to ask you, what's this trip all about? Tell our listeners.
Well, just a few weeks ago, as I saw this crisis in Israel, you know, unfolding, and you know, to put it bluntly, really increasing anti-Semitism in the West, in Europe, like we've never seen it before, in the United States, like we've not seen it before, in terms of the media and even the administration, I have to say. I thought, you know, it would be a good thing for Christians right now to stand up and speak up. And it's been everything that we had hoped and more.
Well, I want to play a clip from an interview we did today. Earlier, we were in a small community just outside of the Gaza border in southern Israel. And I want to play this clip, and then, Rich, I got a question for you.
Okay.
While we were here today, a missile launched from Gaza Strip came into the community, and it hit the house that you had lived in up until four months ago.
4 weeks ago.
What do you say to those who are saying, you know what, maybe Israel's just being a little too hard on Gaza? Is it not really the issue here is you protecting your home?
It's very hard to compare the power of a military to the power of a terrorist organization. In a guerrilla warfare, there will always be one that's stronger and one that's weaker. If you have an army, you have weapons that can attack. The question is, why are we eating people? Yes, it's. I agree that there's more damage on the other side because we spend our money protecting people with Iron Dome. They spend their money digging tunnels and hurting the civilians. So there's casualties, but I don't think any sovereign state should accept hitting its sovereignty by other state by targeting missiles for 14 years on civilian settlements without wiping up areas. I think if you will shoot from Mexico into Texas, the next day the Texans will not wait for the Federals. They will wipe down Tijuana. So I think it's still weak, too weak.
Again, that took place earlier this morning in a little community just outside the Gaza border in Israel, the border with Gaza. And Ari was the man's name. And we happened to be just stopping there to visit. We were inside and we heard the alarms go off. We went into the bunker. We heard the missile hit. We felt the missile hit. And found out after we came out, this man's house that he had just moved out of 4 weeks ago was hit by that rocket from the Gaza Strip. So it was a little, you know, we were pretty close to what was happening there. But these people live with it each and every day. But, you know, when you look at statistics and you look at news stories, it's one thing. But when you look in the eyes of people and you hear their stories and you look at the children and you look at the fear in their faces, it adds a whole new dimension.
And you sense the courage of the people, too. Certainly they're concerned and they're fearful, but they have tremendous courage and faith. And that was a blessing to me to see that. And then they told us what a blessing it was for us to be with them. They said it was like a big hug to realize that you are here to support us and encourage us.
You mentioned, Rich, during the break, you mentioned our first guest this morning. We had a breakfast meeting, and he was late.
Oh, yes, he was a few minutes late, and he apologized. He said, I'm sorry for being a few minutes late. I had to wait until my oldest daughter woke up. He said, "We live on the upper floor, did you say the fourth floor or the sixth floor or something, his apartment. In order to get down to the bomb shelter in 15 seconds, they have to run down those flights of stairs and get down into the bomb shelter every time they hear the alarm go off. And he said, you know, when the children are sleeping, we have to carry them. And my wife can't carry both of them at the same time and make it down there in 15 seconds. And so she said, would you please wait until the oldest daughter awakes and then go to your meeting. And he said, so that's what I did, and so I'm sorry, I'm a few minutes late.
And that's the stories. It's the, you know, yeah. You look at the children in daycares that are in you know, essentially bomb shelters.
Yeah, when we say pray for this region, we need to pray for the Palestinians and we need to pray for the Jewish people. I mean, imagine being a Palestinian parent and your children, let's say, are in a school, and you know that someone is launching rockets from the parking lot or from the top of the school, and essentially, you know, they're using your children as human shields. Or let's say, you know, the Israelis are warning that they're going to bomb a house or houses because it's a launching pad. So they send leaflets. They sort of knock on the roof with little firecrackers to warn. Or they're actually texting people that live in each home or calling them on the phone. Three methods. Yet the Palestinian leadership, Hamas is saying, you may not leave. You should not leave. You must not leave. And essentially, you know, condemning their people to you know, a fate as human shields. I mean, and the prime minister years ago, Golda Meir, said this about the terrorists and their strategy. We can forgive the Arabs for killing our children. We cannot forgive them for forcing us to kill their children, essentially using them as human shields. We will only have peace with the Arabs when they love their children more than they hate us. And I think that really shows, you know, the wickedness, the barbarism that we're talking about. So we need a supernatural revival, renewal, and an evangelistic push. No doubt about that. We pray for that. But there is this reality of evil in the world, and God has ordained governments to take care of that. And we have to support that and speak up and speak out for that.
Well, no, I don't think there's any place more clearly seen the conflict of worldviews. Mm-hmm. One which sees man as being valuable intrinsically because he's created an image of God and worthy to be protected.
Yeah.
With that sees a human as you know, just something else that's out there, another piece of property. And Israel is representing that biblical worldview of the value of human beings.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Again, that was Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of National Religious Broadcasters, and Rich Bott, president of Bott Radio Network. To find out more about our trip to Israel, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Also, let me remind you, September the 14th, Star Spangled Sunday. You can participate, be a part of that event. Governor Mike Huckabee, Senator Ted Cruz, the Benham Brothers, and more. You won't want to miss that. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, folks, that's all we have time for today. Let me thank you again for joining us, and let me leave you with the encouraging words from the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6. When we've done everything we can do, when we've prayed, we've prepared, and we've taken our stand, by all means, let's keep standing.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.